since. And I don't believe you've missed a festival in the years that I've been here. Let's give Betty Mae Jumper a big welcome to the Florida Folklife Area stage. I would like to tell you that she will also be on the main stage again tonight at 6:15. Those of you who were at the amphitheater stage last night heard her as well, and we're just very glad that she can be part of the festival each year. Betty Mae.
My name is Betty Mae Jumper. I live in Hollywood, Florida. I'm the Seminole tribe, belong to the Seminole tribe. There's over 2,000 of us in the state of Florida, and I belong to that tribe. We have five reservations. Our main office is in Hollywood Reservation, where they do conduct meetings and do a lot of business out of there. And Brighton and Big Cypress Reservation. One is Brighton, it's around Okeechobee Lake, and Big Cypress is right at the middle of the state. When you go to on I-95 going across the Everglades, you can turn in at the filling station and about 20 miles in. That's where the reservation is. And another one is in Markley. That's a small one that they start. And then in Tampa, Florida, we have another one. Now we have another one in Fort Pierce that they just got the land to make a reservation out there. We have Indians scattering all over the state, it seems like, and we have different reservations. The stories that have been told by my people have come down a long ways down. They were my uncles, my grandmothers, the older generation of the village, usually tell you the stories while you sit around a campfire. Or sometimes you go to bed under mosquito net, under the chickies, and they will be in the next bed, and they tell you until you go to sleep. And so this is the way I have learned all these stories. The stories is not supposed to be let out. It's supposed to just stay in the family, in the group, in the tribe. But I'm beginning to notice that we're losing it. We're losing it, and our children is not learning it. So I decided to go ahead and break the tradition and write a book. And so I have a Seminole legend. I have written a book illustrated by Guy LaBrie. It's a beautiful book, and I'm real proud of it. And so a lot of school have got them and put them in their library, and they've been using it. And I'm real glad, because that's the way we're going to learn and get along with each other in this world. The stories that we tell is about how they teach the Indian kids what not to do and what to do and why. Why is the reason like this? You all have Bugs Bunny in the white world. We have Lion Rabbit. He always tells lies, so they call him the Lion Rabbit. Chofilaksha means Lion Rabbit. So I'm going to tell you about the rabbit, how he went and killed an alligator. Once upon a time, there was a big gathering. There was only one language, and everything, even the ants and everything, understood each other, and they used to perform the program, just like you all doing here. And each one put on a program, and everybody, all the things and animals and everything, watched them and see how they performed their own programs and everything that they put on. So this is what they were doing. Rabbits hang around for a while, and he got tired of it. He thought, I'll go for a walk. So he walked around, and he went to the edge of the lake, and he was going there, and he came up on an alligator laying there with his mouth wide open. He went and kicked him, and he said, well, get away from here, I'm sleeping. He said, what do you got your mouth open for? He says, well, that's what I put my mouth out so I would kill the germs. He says, I put my teeth out so it would kill the germs around my teeth and inside of my mouth. And this is the way what I do while I go to sleep on a bank. And he talked to him for a while, and they were talking. And Rabbit decided that he was going to invite him to go toward where the dances and all the things that they putting on over there. So he asked the rabbit, he says, Rabbit, he said, why don't you go up halfway with me and we go sit and talk while you keep your mouth open and let the sun come in and you will hear all the singing and performance that's going on. alligator thought a while, and he said, yeah, that would be a good idea. I could hear a lot of things up there. So he said, come on, follow me. So he followed him. So he followed the rabbit, and away they went. And he was going by, and they finally got to halfway, and they could hear that music real good. So he said, here's the place we all can sit. And when the alligator was trying to lay down, he went and got a stick and started beating it. He beat him and beat him, beat him, until the alligator ran back to the pond and jumped in the pond, or in a lake. And so the rabbit didn't kill the alligator, so he was kind of mad. He went back to the where they all performing the programs on us and the dances and everything going on. So he got down there, and he stick around a while, and then later on, he got tired again, and he decided he'd go walking. He ran into a squirrel up in a tree. He said, squirrel, squirrel, come down here and loan me your coat. The squirrel said, I'm not about to loan you coat. You'll probably dirty it, or you'll probably tear it up. You'll do something with it. The rabbit says, no, I won't. He says, I just want to borrow it for just this afternoon. So they argue and argue for a while, and rabbit always get away with things anyway. And so he went and loaned him that jacket, and he put it on, and he went back toward the lake, and he was singing, fitz-fa-doom, fitz-fa-doom, like a little squirrel going up down the lake. He finally came up to the alligator where he was laying. He was laying out again. So he went and kicked the alligator. He said, what are you doing? He said, that's the way rabbit was trying to wake me up. And I thought he was going to be watching a program with me. But he went and beat me up. And I had to get back to the lake to get away from him. He said, did rabbit beat you up? And he says, yes, oh, yes, he did. I guess he wanted to kill me, but he didn't know how to kill him. So a rabbit was real, have an idea. So he went and they went and talked to other things, and they talked for a while. Then he went back to the subject again. He said, rabbit tried to kill you, alligator? And he said, yes. He said, he didn't know how to kill me. And so the rabbit said, how do you die? How do they kill you? Well, he said, first you hit me on the back, then I can't move. Then you hit me on the head until I die. And that's the way you kill me. But he didn't know me. So he just whipped me. And so they lay down, they stayed there and talked a while. And he said, that little hill here. He says, why don't we go up there? And you lay up there and you can get your teeth with killing your germs up there. And he said, all right. He said, that'll be fine. He said, it's a little bit more closer to the sun. So he followed him up, and while he was following him, there was a stick laying there. So rabbit grabbed a stick, and he went and hit alligator's back, and he can't move no more. So he went and hit his head. I don't know how many times until alligator died. So this is the way rabbit got the best of an alligator and killed the alligator. So if you ever find an alligator walking around on the road or somewhere, and if you want to kill him, you hit his back, then he can't move, and then you then you hit his head, and he will die. This is the way the alligator dies. This was teaching things like that, you know. Thank you. Our children, when we teach things, we always do that, and this is the way the Indians kills alligator, hit its back and then hit its head. So that's teaching children how to kill alligator. And another, there's a lot of alligators, a lot of rabbit stories. Another one is, I'm going to tell you about, how many of you at the program last night and hear me tell stories? I told about the bad angel, and some of you all didn't hear it, so I'm going to tell that story again. The Indians always ride in canoes, and they go up the river and hunt and all that. And they usually put their village or chickies on a hammock near to the water. So they would be near to the water, and this is the way they travel. In this village live a woman with two beautiful daughters. And they always cook early in the morning before daylight, and the hunters always eat before they go. And so this is what they do every morning. One morning she tried to wake them up, and they won't wake up. Those two girls won't wake up, and she tried. Well, she thought they're too tired. So she left them and went ahead and cooked a lot of those hunters already ate and left. Then she tried again, go back in there and try it again, but she can't wake them up. So she went outside and told the Indian doctor that was around, and a lot of older people, but they all come in, but they couldn't wake those girls up. And they just the Indian doctor said she didn't know why. So when the hunters came back, they told them, and nobody don't know, seem to know why the girls are sleeping. And so they had a runner that goes to villages to villages that tell messages and all that. He was there. So they went and asked him if he could run to this medicine man of the Everglades, the wise Indian medicine man. So they sent him, and he ran, and he went down there, and he told him all about the girls, how they sleep, and they can't wake them up. And so he thought and thought. He says, there's a lot of strange things that goes on in the Everglades. Sometimes you see things that you can't hardly tell what's going on. So he says, it's one of these things. But I think, he says, a bad angel must have came and got the hearts of those two girls. That's why they can't wake up. And he said, you must go back and tell those people to send somebody up in the skyland, bad skyland, where the bad angel lives. And so they can get the hearts back through that way. And so he ran back and he told all the people there. And so they sent the highest bird that can fly, but he couldn't reach him, so he came back down. They climbed the mountains. They even tried to build a ladder, but nobody can't seem to reach that high land in the where the bad angels lives. And so 2 days pass, and the third day coming on, and the mother was getting scared because that medicine man said on the fourth day they'd be dead. So she had to do something, and she was sitting there just crying. And at the distance, she heard something like this. Anugadi, Anugadi, what about me? What about me? And all the other people and animals and all that can't reach the skyland laugh at them and said, what can they do, those little creatures like that, that we can't do? They can't do nothing. And they just made fun of her. So it went on. And the evening was going. And she knew tomorrow morning they'd be dead if she don't do nothing about it. And she started crying, sitting at the at the girl's side, in the side of the chickie. And so so she heard that voice again. Anugadi, what about me? What about us? And so he says, come on, sit on my lap. Let's talk. So that one of the little mice came running over there and jumped on her lap and sit up a little and looking up in her eyes and said, we can go get it. My friend and I can go get it. We can go get it. And she looked at him. She thought, how can they carry the big hearts back? But he just kept saying, we can get it. We can go get it. So he said, well, I might as well trust anybody, so I might as well trust you too. He said, get your buddy. So he called his buddy, and he came, and they both sat up there and said, we can go get it. We can get it. You'll hear us when we get it and coming back. She said, okay, away with you. Go. So they went and jumped up and ran. And so she stayed in by her girl's side through the night. Middle of the night come, and she's still sitting there. And then it was passing the middle night, going in toward daylight. And way at the distance, at far away, she heard a small voice coming through the Everglades singing. Apihutegati nagun sananame sidigosika yo anoste bilolos bilolos yagni hopa kisachun hopana kaya chunusalakchunusun dele. Far away land I have traveled, far away land we have traveled. We went a long, long way, and we have walked all the way, and here we are, bringing the hearts back. And he says, "We're coming in with hearts." That's the way they were singing in Indian. And they couldn't believe it. So they all just wondered what they have. But they kept. But the mother thought, maybe they are, maybe they not. But she was going to wait for them, and she waited for them. And before the sun come up, it was still dark. And she was really beginning to scared. She didn't know whether those little mice was going to bring the hearts in. And by that time, before daylight, before the sun come up, or before it was still dark, and at edge of the chickie, here they stood with that heart in their hand and sang, "Api hude ka si na kun sarana mitsri ko si ka yo anoste bilalus bilalus yakni hopa ke sa chun hopana kayak chunustunuk chunosun dele." When they say that, they told those heart, and it got into girl's heart, chest, and they jumped up and said, "Mom, you're supposed to wake us up a long time ago. Why didn't you wake us up?" And she said, "Wake you up." He said, "It's been 4 days and four nights. This is the fourth morning." He said, "You would have been dead, but if it wasn't for these two little mice that brought your hearts back from bad angels' land." He says, and so the mother said, "From now on until the dying day," he said, "if the little mice goes out in the field and garden or cornfield and eat the heart of the corn," he said, "don't ever kill them because they saved my daughter's life." So that's why you see the little mice eat hearts of the corn sometime out in the field. There's two languages in my tribe. Miccosukee language is not written language. And Creek is a written language. And they are always different from the two different languages. And so they have a lot of things that a lot of kids ask me. I do telling the stories to the kids in schools. And a lot of times they ask me, "How do you say some words?" Well, I said, "I'll teach you one word." And I said, "You always remember you have a toe. Everybody has a toe. My toe." You can say my toe. My toe. That means thank you in the Creek language. My toe. And Sunabas is a Miccosukee. But you can't remember sometimes Sunabas, but you can remember my toe. You can always remember my toe. Sometimes the kids come around me 2-3 years in and say, "My toe!" So that's what I learned. And then I'm going to sing two songs for you all, and one is Creek and the other one is Miccosukee. These are Christian songs. When I was a little girl, 5 or 6 years old, a missionary, old missionary, used to come, and so he was a Creek, and he taught me this song. Jesus, I know Jesus, Joga ta ko cha ke Jesus, Ho pui ta ki in a git, Yik cha ke Jesus, in yik Jesus. A ta no ki Jesus, A ta no ki Jesus, A ta no ki Jesus, Na to ka cha ke Jesus. Anybody know what that is? Jesus loves me in the Greek language. And Miccosukee, I told you that they don't have language, but they do have a lot of Christian songs in their church. And one of them goes like this. Unti chas kanta api heiki, unti chas kanta api heiki, unti chas kanta api heiki, monti okla kanton, Ingo sa patot monto ni siwa. Ingo sa patot monto ni siwa. Ingo sa patot monto ni siwa. Monti ogla kanton. It says, "Come and follow me, come and follow me up in the beautiful mansion. You can follow me up there." He said, "There's no dying, there's no tears, there's no hurting there. Come and follow me, come and follow me." That's the way it sings in Miccosukee. Thank you.
Betty Mae, thank you for being with us in the Folklife area, and she will be on the main stage at 6:15 this evening. Let's give her another round of applause. Thank you so much. I would like to invite our visitors this morning to go down to the Seminole Family Camp. The family camp is located by the old marble stage. It's really past the old marble stage on the other side of the road. But this is a traditional Seminole family camp. There are several chakis there that have been put up by the Seminole tribe following the traditional structures. And in those chakis are women that are demonstrating some of the Seminole traditional crafts. The three main crafts that I know that are being demonstrated are the basket making, the patchwork, and doll making. But they're also sharing some of their stories, and particularly some of women's lore is being shared this morning, things that are considered special and unique to women and that are not shared outside the community of women. And I've always thought that was very interesting, and some of those people are there today. Also, for those of you who are interested specifically in Seminole culture, I would like to mention that Mary Johns, our Seminole storyteller, is in the tan building behind the root beer stand, directly behind where you're sitting. And she is in that building all day today, sharing also her Seminole stories and her knowledge of herbal treatments with our visitors. So I invite you to consider that as something to do here at the Florida Folk Festival. Our next performer has not arrived yet. We were expecting someone to be here to share with you some African stories. And the person that I've worked with that also does the running for me had to go to another place. So I don't know what has happened to this particular performer. I do know that at 12 o'clock, Lucille Francis Fuller will be here with some Jamaican storytelling. And I just ask that you understand that our schedule has to be fairly flexible here at the festival. We're very spread out. There's been some confusion about scheduling among performers and some over-scheduling. So if there are any questions that I could help direct someone to a specific event in the park, I'd be glad to do that.
Thank you very much.
Bravo. Do those tunes have names?
Their names, I'm not sure of the real names of the tunes. They've been different. I heard different names. I heard the rose tree. I heard the white lily. I heard different names. Sean, what was his name, the Irish fiddle player? Sean McGuire used to play those two tunes on a record that he made one time. And I just learned them by ear, listening to him playing them.
Were they reels?
Reels. Those are two reels, yes.
And what is a reel? What distinguishes a reel from a jig or another type of
tune? Well,
a
reel is a fast, you can call it, it's a fast time. Jigs are written in 3/4 time, you know, three-quarter notes to the bar, while the others have 4 beats to the bar, you know, bump, 2, 3, 4. But then... you're using 8th and 16th notes when you're playing reels, and that's what speeds it up, you know, and sometimes even more.
Well, I'm interested in how those tunes tell a story in some respects. Sometimes it's by how they're named, and sometimes it's by how they feel or move. This is a storytelling year, and you have a life story as well. How did you begin to play?
Well, I started to play. My brother was a musician. He wasn't the greatest musician in Ireland, but he was just one of the boys from home, and he played what was known as the melodeon in those days, or the melodeon, and in other words, an accordion, but a small accordion, like a G, one-key accordion. Then later on he got it, one with a more chromatic, with 2 row of keys on it. But he could read music. He learned to read music because he lived a lot of his time in the towns, and He worked with the town people. We lived about 4 miles out of the town. But he was associated a lot with townspeople because he was an athlete, he was a bicycle rider and a runner and all the other things that went with it. And then he played in the bands. He even played with little bands like a drummer and all that type of stuff. But he liked music, and he was 20 years older than I was, so he was like a father to me. And he made me learn to play the fiddle. And the first fiddle I ever got was a tin fiddle that was made by the Dohertys of Ireland, of Donegal, the very well-noted John Doherty's family, Mickey Doherty and Simon Doherty and those people that made the tin. So they made a few fiddles out of tin. And that was the first fiddle I got, and nobody paid for that fiddle.
What did he pay?
2 shillings. 2 shillings. That was my first fiddle, a 2 shilling fiddle. It wasn't the greatest fiddle, but it was a unique thing, and you could play any tune on it.
What did it sound like made of tin?
Well, it was a sort of a soft, a soft scratchy noise. But it was music. And it wasn't tuned up concert pitch because it didn't have the stability, because they had to put a wooden neck on it, you know, and a fingerboard of wood, and they had to put that on a tin thing. Imagine putting that on the end of a tin can and putting strings on it. So you could never put the pressure on it that you could put on this fiddle or any other fiddle. But it was a fiddle, and it was my first fiddle.
Now, you've been living in the Newport Richey area of Florida. Is there a reason when you moved to Florida? Did you retire here?
I retired here. I lived in New York, in the Queens, Long Island section of New York. And like you said before, the job I did in New York was drive a bus for the Transit Authority. And I did other things too, as well as driving buses. I taught people how to drive buses and all that type of thing in my later years, and then I parked buses and I did everything, a little bit of everything with the Transit Authority as far as bus driving was concerned. And then I retired fairly young. I was 54 years old when I retired, and I had 7 children, and there were still 4 of them going to school when I retired. And we made out.
I'm interested in another thing. Did you always play, or did you stop and pick it back up?
Yes, that's true. I played the fiddle in Ireland, and my brother used to take me around to all these little sessions at night and listen to these old-time fiddlers playing their tunes and their reels and their jigs and their hornpipes. And I picked up a lot of those tunes from those people. And there was a lot of Irish dancing and Irish ceilidh bands. Ceilidh bands was pretty popular in Ireland. But there was only one thing about it. You see, I lived out in the country, and we made our living on the farm, a little farm, about 50-acre farm, as well as weaving. It was like a side job for us, this weaving, a part-time job, because we did it at home. We had our own looms at home. And you could work full-time if you worked in the town, but because we lived on the farm and we wove as well. But we needed a little extra money. Now and again, the weaving wasn't always a full-time job. So there was very little money in the gay Irish music. It was more a thank you thing and a praise, and you did it for glory. But then the band started and the war came and the big bands came in and English music started, and the fiddle sort of almost was obsolete in those bands. So what was very popular instrument was a piano accordion, and I got one of those, and I played it for many years with the bands in Ireland, and then I played it again, the bands out here. And then the fiddle was put away, and it wasn't taken up for a long time, till I went to live out. Most of them, you know, and they says, why don't you play them? Well, I says, I don't even have a fiddle. So they says, why didn't you get one? And this guy says, I have one. Here, you take it. Give me one of his fiddles. He says, that's my father's fiddle. I have at home a nice copy of a Strad. And I started playing the Irish music with those people, and that's how I got back into Irish music again, because I stopped playing piano accordion when I was about 50 years old, and that's almost 24 years ago now.
Well, with that, I'd like to invite you to play another tune.
Okay.
Of your choosing.
One of the oldest tunes in Donegal that they played was Miss McLeod's Reel. And I like the way, I think it's a very old tune. And it's played in different ways because different fiddlers had different variations on it. So I'll play it the easy way first, and then I'll dribble around with it, as they say.
Donegal style. Now, that came over to the American old-time music repertoire, and I play that tune on the banjo and sometimes call it Hop High Ladies, the Cakes All Dough, or Did You Ever See the Devil, Uncle Joe? Uncle Joe, did you ever see the devil, Uncle Joe? I don't mind the weather if the wind don't blow.
Uh-huh.
Does that come from Ireland?
Most likely it did, because I think this is one of the real old Irish reels that went away back as far as I know where to go. As far as I know where to go, the lady's laughing at me. Well, that's how it is.
Do you have family in Florida? You mentioned your children. Where are they living?
I have seven children, and there's two of them now in Florida. Two of them lives on the East Coast. One is a nurse in Jupiter, and the other is a teacher over in Stewart is the place. So there's two of them down here, and I have another one is in Washington. He works for the government, and I have another one. He's a pastor in a church. He's a Catholic priest up in New York. And the other one is a lieutenant in the police department. And the other two were secretaries and stuff, but they're married now and housewives. They don't work any place. They think the children take their time up.
Do you have brothers and sisters? Did you?
I had brothers and sisters, but not. I only have one sister alive now in Ireland. I came up quite a bit after everybody else. That was 14 years after my sisters, next to me. And they're all dead now except one. So I'm the only one left except one in Ireland. She's about 24 years older than I am.
I think we've got like 5 minutes on our program. I'd like to invite you to play some tunes.
Another couple of tunes. Okay. How about playing one of old Carlin's old tunes, like old Carlin's Concerto or something like that? Nice and easy. Thank you.
was Carolyn's concerto. Perhaps it would be appropriate to say a few words about Turlough O'Carolan and his place in music history.
True. Well, I don't know that much about him, only that he just wrote very nice tunes, and I only became acquainted with him in my older days. I knew very little about him in Ireland. When I was in Ireland, I was a long time in this country before I even knew that such a man even existed, because they didn't play those type of tunes with the Cayley bands and that type of stuff, you know?
Well, he was a blind harper who existed during the Baroque era, and that's why these tunes are so lovely and stay in the memory like that. Is there a Cayley dance type of a tune that you can play on the fiddle that would give somebody an idea of the difference between the music you might play for a Cayley that was different from that wonderful composed Baroque sound?
Well, the Cayley dance is any reels or jigs are played for Cayley. You know, like Haste to the Wedding and all those type of tunes, Irish Wise Woman, and even that one of Old Carlin's tunes is played, like Plansky Brown, and it's a good Cayley tune. They played it, although they never dedicated it to O'Carlin much. I used to know that tune. I didn't know he even wrote it. You know, I didn't know anything about it. But Cayley tunes are mostly jigs and reels. And you wanted me to play maybe a jig. I didn't play one
yet. I think
we've
got time for one tune, and I want to thank Ed Keeney for this wonderful fiddling. Was misinformed. We have a whole 5 minutes, and that gives us a chance to talk a little bit more and maybe play another handful of tunes. Yeah. If you've just arrived, Ed is living in the Newport Richey area of Florida and has been playing out. I actually saw a postcard that I received before I met you of a concert you appeared at on St. Patrick's Day in the Gainesville area.
Yes, we had a wonderful time there.
Was it good?
Yeah, they really responded, and they made us very welcome up in Gainesville, and we had a wonderful time with them, and they treated us so good. I played for about an hour and 10 minutes. I see the guy that employed me almost and brought me up there now. He just arrived here, a very famous teacher of music and flute player, Larry Reeves. There he is. Yeah. I was going to tell them a lot of lies, how mean you were to me, but now that you are here, I have to tell the truth. They were so good to me.
Well, at this point, it's also appropriate to ask for a question from the audience. This is the sort of thing we do, and Ed will be appearing later in the afternoon at the Folk Narrative stage. Before we ask Ed for another tune, does anyone have a question or something like that? I'm not looking at the schedule, but it's in print and it hasn't changed.
My children were never interested in music.
The answer is, sorry. I'm sorry. Go on. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to say that they don't. They do. They never. It's not in any of their interest in music, or not we interested in music. I'm sorry. My brother was the only one that was really interested in music. My father liked music, and he sang, and he played the old accordion, but he was not a popular musician. He didn't perform. He just played it at home for his own fun, his own amusement.
Ed will be appearing on the Folklife Narrative stage at 2:30, and we'll do a similar interview like this and solicit questions. Is Ann next? Well, oh, I see our performer, and I'm going to ask Ed to play one final tune, and I'll surrender the stage to your MC, Mary Beland McKenzie, I'd like to just say a few words about how wonderful you've all been to share the Folklife area with the whole other rest of the festival. We do in the Folklife area we wear many hats. We provide a lot of ethnic diversity. We try to reflect research. We also try to reflect new acquaintances who we have just met from various important traditions in the state of Florida. And with that, I'd like to ask Ed for one final tune.
Yeah, I'll do one more tune. This one's associated with Sean McGuire, too, one of his tunes that he did in the key of A.
Thank you very much, Ed Keeney, Irish fiddler. He was great, wasn't he? Thank you. For those of you who have just come up, this is the Folklife Area stage. We're the stage that are showcasing many of the cultural traditions that abound in Florida, and we are also reflective of the theme, which is storytelling. Our next person is a Jamaican storyteller, and she grew up in rural Jamaica. Storytelling was the main source of entertainment. In the evenings, she heard stories from the older folks in her family, mostly her grandmother, but others as well. And this is a tradition that she wants to share with our Folk Festival audience this morning. I ask that you help me in welcoming Lucille Frances Fuller to the Folklife Area stage.
Testing, testing. Thank you very much, Mary. Good morning, everyone. Is it still morning or is it afternoon? Oh, good afternoon. I'm accustomed to stand and do my stories, you know, but they put me down here, so let me sit. Hello there. You see, I'm tall, and because I'm tall, I like to stand. You see, when I sit, I look so short. I'm not accustomed to being very short. Okay, as you have heard, I'm a Jamaican storyteller. I was born and raised in the country part of Jamaica. The east of Jamaica, they call it the Rio Grande Valley. Those of you who have had the chance of vacationing in Jamaica, maybe you have had the opportunity of going rafting on the Rio Grande. Let me just ask two questions. Is there anyone here who has ever been to Jamaica? Oh, great. Very good. Did you get to go rafting on the Rio Grande? Did you go to the falls? Very good. The falls. Is it? Duns River Falls in Ochi. Very good. Well, those are just two of the many, many exciting places. To the others of us who have never had that chance, Jamaica is a very mountainous country. It's in the West Indies or the Caribbean area. We have mountains going all the way up to over 7,000 feet. As a result, it's cool and it's warm. We do not have winter out there. It's tropical. And all the nice, delicious fruits and everything we have out there. And, of course, way back there, it was different from it is now. We never had the amenities and the nice stuff that youngsters today have. As I was saying over there in the auditorium, for light at night, sometimes we used to have to use like the tilly lamp. We have a glass lamp inside with shade, but the kitchen was a way out and the bathroom way out. So if you want to go to any of these facilities at night, then we have a lamp like this. You put some kerosene oil in here. It's made from a milk can. It has a cover. You put a wick through here and then you close it. And the piece of cloth or cord pull the oil up. And this would be our lamp to go to see outside at night. And we had to study with it. Do the geography and the civics and the history and the social studies, and we got through with it, so it was fine. Yeah, that's what we had, so we made good use of what we had. For ironing our uniform, we had this. We would put four of this in a coal pot stove or make a fire, a wood fire, and when it burnt down to coal, we put there, and when it's hot, we clean the face off on a piece of burlap, or we call it crocus, and iron our uniform. They used to be pleated and white blouse, and the pleats could cut you. And we look nice and pretty going to school every day. For the floor, we use the coconut, top of the coconut, and we cut this off, get a piece of beeswax, warm it on the fire, rub it on it, and then we shine the floor. It used to be board floor like this. And you could have it worse in your face through the floor. So because we had so many things to do with our time, we never used to get in trouble as these youngsters today. Youngsters today, they don't have anything to do. They get in the refrigerator, they eat a sandwich, have a drink, and they sit in front of the television. We never had those luxuries. We had to carry water. Well, later on, we had pipe, but before, we had to go over there and get that water in a bucket and put it on our head and walk with it to the house. We had to carry water to bathe, water to wash clothes, water to do everything. So our time was well taken. You see, so we grow big and strong. You know, our parents never take us to the doctor. If say, oh, we have a little pain here, a little pain here. They would use herbs and boil herbs and make tea, give us a bath, and in the morning the fever is gone and we are fit as a fiddle, ready to go to school the next day. But those were good days. So some of the things we are trying to do today is to bridge the past with the present, to bring these customs into today's society that our youngsters can learn and be identified as who they are, where they're coming from. I'm living in the Miami area, and there are so many different nationalities there. We have a lot of people from Jamaica, Haiti, Nicaragua, Cuba, everywhere. And sometimes some of our youngsters are ashamed of who they are. They say they are somebody else. And we want them to be conscious of who they are and where they are coming from and be proud of themselves, to help to build up their self-esteem and to realize that they can be anybody they want to be. They just have to have an objective, a goal in life, adapt themselves to it, and then work toward the goal and they can achieve. And if we are successful in doing this, then I can guarantee you tomorrow and on, we'll have less fear of the youngsters in our society. So we are working on that. I go to schools in Dade, Broward, Palm Beach. I do some television shows. I have maybe about 40 different shows with the school public television system down there. I go to libraries, museums, festivals. I'm here sometimes. And we try to help people to see how important it is to be who they are and to know that they can really achieve in life. Okay, let's get back to Jamaica. While I was there, we never had TV and Nintendo and all those luxuries. So for recreation, we used to sit and listen to stories. We have Anansi stories. We had story about Brother Tukuma, Brother Dryhead, Brother Peace of Foot, name it. We had ghost stories. And I want to pause here to tell you when it's time for a story. And if they are going to tell ghost stories, we make sure that everything outside was finished. And we get ourselves clean and ready because we are not going to go back outside. Because when a ghost story is finished, if you hear a little rumbling, you just, oh, that's one of the ghosts. You know, you just don't want to get back outside. Okay, I'm not going to tell you a ghost story. I'm going to tell you a story about Brother Anansi and Brother Dryhead. It was hard time, you know. And so they never had a lot of things to give the kids. And Brother Anansi had a wife and he had three children. So they decided, so let us as a community bond together. Let us not talk anything negative about anyone. Let's say positive things, good remarks, and see if we can build the community for the benefit of our children. So they agreed on that. So Brother Anansi is very clever. You know, he said, well, I get to find a way to catch these people so that I can get something from them to help me and my children. You see, he talk a little different from everybody else. So he said, tomorrow morning, I'm going to get a pickaxe, and I'm going to go on top of that rock over there. I'm going to pretend as if I'm digging. And anyone pass by and criticize me, then I know they're going to die or get in trouble. So early the next morning, Brother Anansi got a pickaxe. And he went all the way down the street, right in a crossroad where there's a rock up there. And he went up on the rock and he started to dig with his pickaxe. Pang, ang, ang, ang. Pang, ang, ang, ang. Pang, ang, ang. And he looked and he saw Brother Tiger coming and he started, he held his head down and he continued digging. Pang, ang, ang, ang. Pang, ang, ang, ang. So Brother Tiger came. Good morning, Brother Anansi.
Good morning, Brother Tiger.
Brother Tiger said,
so, Brother Anansi, I'm glad to see you this morning. What are you doing up there on the rock top?
Brother Anansi said,
oh, my friend, Brother Tiger, it's hard time, and I'm trying to prepare the soil so I can plant some corn to get food for my children.
Brother Tiger said, oh, you're trying to plant corn. Okay, I'll see you later. Brother Tiger walked off. And when he got around the corner, Tiger stood up in the street and he said, my goodness, Anansi must have gone mad. Can someone plant corn on the rock? He's stupid. Brother Tiger fell down. Anansi expected something to happen. So he put his pickaxe down and he ran down the road and he looked and he saw Brother Tiger lying down, groaning. He picked up Brother Tiger, he put him into a big bag he had and he tied it up and went up on the rock and put it one side. And he picked up the pickaxe again and he started to dig.
Pang, ang, 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 ang. Pang, ang, 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 ang. Pang, ang, ang, ang.
There comes Brother Dog. He stopped. Good morning, Brother Anansi.
Good morning, Brother Dog. How are you today, Brother Dog?
Brother Dog said, well, I'm fine, Anansi. What are you doing up there on top of the rock?
I'm being a dog. It is so hard. I cannot find any food for my children. So I am preparing the land to plant some corn so that I can get corn to feed my children.
Brother Dog said, bye, Brother Anansi. He got around the corner. He said, what in the world is happening to Anansi? He must have gone crazy. Can someone plant corn on the bare rock? Brother Dog fell down. And Nancy got down quickly, and he went, and he looked, he saw Brother Dog there. Oh, he put him in the bag, tied him out, and put it back. By this time, Brother Dryhead heard of what Anansi doing. And he said, no, Brother Tiger, Brother Dog, Brother Piece of Foot, Brother Tukuma, all these people, Anansi caught them. I am going to catch Anansi. And he had very little hair on his head, Brother Dryhead, very little hair on his head. So that morning, very early, he went to a barber. And he had the barber shave his head clean as the palm of my hands. Not a scrap of hair on it. Clean. And then he went. He didn't wear any hat. And he walked past Brother Anansi. He was there in the rock top. So Brother Dryhead stopped. Good morning, Anansi. Anansi cleaned his throat. Good morning, Brother Dryhead. So how are you today, Brother Dryhead? Brother Dryhead, I'm fine. I'm just going on an errand. So Anansi said, to where are you going today, Brother Dryhead? Brother Dryhead said, Brother Anansi, I am going down to the barber to get my head hair cut. And I'll be right back to talk with you. Okay, all right, Anansi. And Brother Dryhead walk off a little. Brother Anansi leaned back on the pickaxe stick and said, goodness me, I have never seen a fool like Dryhead. Look at his head, and he's going to a barber. Wow, Anansi fell down. And, oh, I forgot. And Dryhead walked right back, saw Anansi, took up Anansi, put him in the bag, tie them out, and then let go all the others that were in the bag and said, yes, Anansi, this is what you have been doing. We should not say anything negative about anyone, and you are doing it. So they decided that they're going to punish Anansi. And they took up Anansi, and they took him to a big open space. And all of them that were in the bags gathered around and said, what should we do with Anansi? And this one said, burn him, burn Anansi, burn him. This one said, drown Anansi, drown him. And everybody chime in with something else. And Brother Anansi in put his head up and he said, yeah, gentlemen, please, you can burn me, you can drown me, you can beat me, you can do anything you want to do with me, but please, gentlemen, don't throw me in the bramble bush, please. They said, oh, he doesn't want to go in the bramble bush. So we are not going to burn him, we are not going to drown him, we are not going to beat him, we are going to throw him in the bramble bush. And so all of them got down, they pick up the bag with big Anansi, and they throw him, batai, into the bramble bush. And Nancy got up, he put his feet back and he laughed. This is where I want to be, but this is where my mother had me. And Nancy got up and he ran away. And he was saved. Jack Mandor, I'm not choosing more. This is the end of the story.
Thank you. I told you before that Anansi was very clever.